There are more than 4,000 small airports in the U.S., from Sea Ranch, California to Baraboo, Wisconsin. The airports service small airplane enthusiasts and joyriders, sure, but they also provide a backbone of commerce for some of these cities that are miles from interstate freeways and larger metropolises. This week, Marketplace launches a long-term reporting project with The Atlantic and the mapping technology company Esri. We're calling it American Futures. The Atlantic's national correspondent James Fallows will be flying his small plane between these airports, telling the story of how the U.S. economy is changing from the ground. Listen to an excerpt of a speech Fallows made about his project at the Esri Software Conference this summer.
I have 10 minutes right now with you to preview and, in fact, to make the very first public mention of what we at The Atlantic consider a very exciting new project, which we'll be carrying out in partnership with Esri and with a major radio program, and which is designed both to reveal something interesting about our world and to explore some important and very promising new possibilities for journalism. Here's the background. In the beginning, journalism was about only words, because for a very long time, plain, unadorned words were the only thing our technologies of communication could carry. In the days of Homer and before, this meant words via the sound of the human voice, which, as our best narrators, interviewers, and storytellers remind us, still has tremendous power. Then the written word, first in hand-drafted manuscripts, letters, or dispatches, and for the past five centuries post-Gutenberg through the revolutionary medium of print. As time and technology went on, reporters, writers, and teachers recognized that more channels of communication could convey a richer range of meaning. Early on, this meant hand drawings and illustrations. Then, around the time of the U.S. Civil War, the possibility of displaying photographs. Later, we had numerical charts and graphics, and through the past decades, the onrush of audio clips, video recordings, live streaming, sensor readings, and all the other facets, good and bad, of modern distributed communications. Now consider the special role of maps. You here understand professionally what most people recognize instinctively, that map-based information has the power to convey at a glance relationships that are slow and murky to describe in words, plus the power to reveal patterns that would otherwise lay concealed. The images you'll be seeing for the next few seconds show some of the saga of the use of maps to convey political, economic, and journalistic information. They range from sketches in the era of exploration, to battle maps from the Revolutionary War, to recreations of Civil War battle lines, to plots of homesteading stakes, to an amazingly ambitious attempt to explain the importance of the Panama Canal, to renderings of explorations including the Spirit of St. Louis Lindbergh flight. Some of these maps, as you see, are better than others, but here's the important point about all of them. They are highly specialized undertakings. Cartographers, draftsmen, newspaper art departments, and others had to labor long and hard to produce even a single map to demonstrate a single point a reporter or writer wanted to make. Even as print, telegraph, radio, and television produced an age of plenty in words, chronicles, and increasingly images, it was still an age of scarcity when it came to maps. They were too hard, slow, and expensive to make by too elite a cadre of specialists to be part of the normal repertoire of explanatory tools. We believe that the age of distributed GIS software plus ubiquitous big data is about to change that circumstance. And our project is designed to illustrate, among other things, what an age of plenty in explanatory maps can mean. We call this effort the American Futures Project, and it draws directly from one strand of the American past. For at least two centuries, since the journeys of Alexis de Tocqueville and Lewis and Clark, Americans and others have tried to gauge the reality of this vast new North American nation by traveling its width and breadth. This has led to the range of reports you see memorialized on this delightful slide, including Dickens, Jack Kerouac, John Steinbeck of Travels with Charlie, that's the dog Charlie, and William Least Heat Moon with his book Blue Highways. Through the past 15 years, as my wife and I have frequently crisscrossed the country in our small Cirrus SR-22 airplane, a plane that is now the most popular plane in the small plane in the entire world because of its unique parachute that lowers the entire plane safely to the ground in event of trouble. We've kept all these models in mind for a kind of reporting we're about to undertake. In our long years of living and traveling through China, Malaysia, Japan, and many other countries, we've predictably been surprised by the unpredictable discoveries we have made at the end of the journey, which we had no idea of at the start. This includes the many times we've flown coast to coast through the middle of America and spent time in small places, Red Oak, Iowa, Rock Springs, Wyoming, Berea, Kentucky, Grand Island, Nebraska, we would not have visited otherwise. This is what we are about to begin on a systematic basis. One of our premises is that American life is increasingly balkanized. People work with, live by, and know about people increasingly similar to themselves, and that its new systems are understandably but unfortunately biased toward big city events and the coasts. When smaller city America appears in the news, too often it's because of natural disaster, a tornado or flood, some bit of quaint color like the world's largest ball of twine, or to provide color for some pre-selected theory. An oddity of transportation affects the unknown quality of smaller town American life. Here is where Americans live. Here is what the interstate system covers, which is a lot but not everything. And yet here is the map of small airports, which reach nearly every bit of populated U.S. territory. It is with some of these missing parts that we plan to explore America in a long-term project that will involve the combined resources of Esri, the Atlantic's print and online outlets, and a radio program that you all know about but will make its own announcement when the project begins next month. In association with Esri's spatial analysis software, we found very intriguing ways to identify types of cities to explore, beyond those we already know about and will continue to discover through serendipity. Cities, for example, with unusually diverse economic or social bases. Cities with high levels of social capital, civic groups, parks, robust school systems. Cities with unusual records in absorbing immigrants or coping with economic shock or preserving and improving their environments. Cities that in these ways and others augment and ground America's awareness of itself. This is just, you see on the screen, just a handful of the places we've initially identified. There are literally hundreds more, and I hope we'll get a chance to see a lot of them. When we do, we'll be writing articles for the Atlantic magazine, doing regular updates on a special Atlantic site, doing radio broadcasts, holding events and meetings, and, crucially, using maps along the way. Let me give you a brief illustration of the new geoblogging tools that Esri's story map team in Washington, D.C. has just now put together, and by just now I mean even last night. I'm going to give you a glimpse of what we'll be doing based on a trial run trip just 10 days ago my wife and I made to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Most people here know of Sioux Falls because of Eros, the treasure house of the world's aerial imagery, which is in a cornfield a dozen miles north of town. Sioux Falls is bigger than most of the cities we'll visit, but it has a surprisingly diverse and dramatic economic, commercial, technological, and sociological base, which we'll begin exploring in detail when our project goes live next month. I'm not going to go into the substance of any of the posts I'm going to show you here, which have to do with the role of Eros in the city's life, why so many of America's credit card companies have ended up in Sioux Falls, why so many of the Midwest pigs are raised in Iowa and then trucked to a slaughterhouse in Sioux Falls on their last day on Earth, why the ethnic makeup of the city has changed so dramatically and all the rest. Instead, I'm going to show you the maps themselves. You'll notice as I scroll through this presentation the way that some of the that as we go from post to post, the maps automatically scroll to match what we're seeing. This is a way, a new blogging tool that allows people to have posts and pictures on the one hand and accompanying maps they create on the other. There are ways we can do comparative analysis. For example, this is the part of Sioux Falls that has been a cultural preservation effort. What you see on yellow is a bike path around the city. The red is some other bike paths. And this illustrates the city's role as retailer to the region. The red areas are big box retail areas and where people come in from the countryside. This, for any of you who are bow fishermen, you'll be able to find a river to fish in Sioux Falls. We're able to see things like to compare aerial and pictorial views. This is the slaughterhouse. It's how it looks on its day off on a Sunday. We're able to talk about comparative social analysis. This was the ethnic makeup of downtown Sioux Falls before recent changes in immigration patterns and changes in the unionization of the packing house. Here is the way things look now, and you can return to comparative contrast. We can. All of you have heard about the shale oil revolution that's made such a difference for North Dakota. We're able to explain with a map like this why South Dakota has to look for different sorts of its economic welfare because of the shale oil deposits reaching into the north and only in this small corner of South Dakota. And interesting geological contrasts. We learned from everyone we spoke with in South Dakota that really the way the state should be divided is East Dakota and West Dakota, because the Missouri River is a geological and sociological and agricultural and every other sort of difference in the state. There are ways you can show this with maps. Those are croplands, and here's the geological difference, and also illustrate them with pictures. And you see, this is looking south along the Missouri. You see the rough prairie on the right of the west and the flatland, the Midwest, on the right and the Midwest on the left. There is a lot more I could show you, but that is what our project is going to be about in the months ahead. And I think that the most important thing to remind you here is that while you've seen some of the things the maps can show, you haven't seen how relatively easy they were to create. That's the most important point about them. In addition to showing through this project, showing to people worldwide something different about America from what they usually encounter, we mean to show journalists, professional and amateur, the difference these new geographical tools can make. Democratizing and distributing the ability to use images, recordings, graphs, and videos has already altered and overall improved our ability to explain the world. Applying that same revolution to map making will have a profound and, we believe, very positive effect. So we look forward to seeing you in your hometowns and to hearing from you about other places we should visit. Thank you very much.